This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
He just shot his arm off. We got pulled over on Larpiner.
I told him not to reach for it. I told him to get his hand out.
You told him to get his ID, sir, and his driver's license.
America mourns after a week of violence.
There is sorrow. There is anger. There is confusion about next steps.
What's next for Congresswoman Corinne Brown after being indicted on multiple counts of fraud?
We got the rest of the story. So I'm looking forward to presenting the rest of the story.
A first-of-its-kind savings plan brings new hope for Floridians with disabilities.
Today is a new day. Today, because of Able United, an individual can save up to $14,000 a year. That changes the playing field for individuals with disabilities.
And Florida's outgoing Senate President Andy Gardner takes a walk down memory lane.
To come up here and know that within a 60-day period you can change a law is very impactful.
All that and more coming up on episode 67 of The Rotunda.
Oh my God, please don't tell me he's dead. Please don't tell me my boyfriend just went like that.
Just keep your hands where they are, please.
Yes, I will, sir. I'll keep my hands where they are.
That's the gut-wrenching video of Diamond Reynolds of Minnesota live-streaming her fiancé, Philando Castile's fatal encounter with a police officer.
You shot 4 bullets into him, sir. He was just getting his license and registration, sir.
Just hours before, people were still trying to come to grips with another video showing officers shooting and killing 37-year-old Alton Sterling while he was pinned to the ground after officers responded to a call about an armed man. The videos were so graphic, so disturbing. They played over and over on cable news and went viral on social media. I grew concerned for everyone viewing the videos as protests started. I was concerned for the psychological trauma of the black lives witnessing again and again these killings. So my first instinct was to offer help. I started researching grief counselors and support groups and immediately started contacting news organizations to get them to play and share what I thought was very critical information as tensions grew. I emailed one reporter, then another. I was going back and forth with another. And at 10:27 Thursday night, I received a text from a friend saying, OMG, a sniper is on the loose in Dallas, killing cops. My heart sank. Friday morning, a response from my journalist friend saying my pitch might not work now based on the police killings in Dallas. I replied, I know, it's sad. But then I said, it's probably now even more critical to share that information. But as in news, with competing deadline pressures, they were on to more pressing angles. President Obama responded to the Dallas shooting during his NATO news conference in Warsaw.
We still don't know all the facts. What we do know is that there has been a vicious, calculated, and despicable attack on law enforcement. The police in Dallas were on duty during doing their jobs, keeping people safe during peaceful protests. These law enforcement officers were targeted, and nearly a dozen officers were shot. 5 were killed.
Donald Trump issued a noticeably un-Trump-like response to the shooting.
We must stand in solidarity with law enforcement, which we must remember is the force between civilization and total chaos. Every American has the right to live in safety and peace. The deaths of Alton Sterling in Louisiana and Philando Castile in Minnesota also make clear how much more work we have to do to make every American feel that their safety is protected.
Here's what Hillary Clinton had to say.
We've got to do everything possible to, you know, support our police and support innocent Americans who have deadly encounters with the police.
But political opponents and some police groups blame President Obama and Black Lives Matter for a, quote, war on cops. Here's former Illinois Congressman Joe Walsh on CNN with Don Lemon after he tweeted in part, quote, "This is now war. Watch out, Obama. Watch out, Black Lives Matter punks. Real America is coming for you," end quote.
Barack Obama has done nothing but hate on cops, accusing cops of being bad and racist. He did it again, Don, a couple days ago, Minnesota.
Hang on, Congressman. When did he accuse cops of being bad and racist? A specific example.
The moment after his first and second and third statement after Ferguson said, there is systemic racism, police departments in this country need to be reformed. I mean, think about that, Don.
Okay, wait a
black
minute.
Man, no.
But that's not accusing cops of being racist. He's actually pointing out the fact there is systemic racism in this country. And there are police departments that need to be reformed.
He said cops were racist.
About that?
By the way, Trump retweeted Walsh, who wrote, "Black Lives Matter were calling for the deaths of cops." Investigators are continuing to look deeper at evidence left behind by former Army reservist Micah Xavier Johnson, the 25-year-old who targeted law enforcement. Here's Dallas Police Chief David Brown.
He was clear of mind, determined to hurt more officers, and without our actions, he would have hurt more officers. So we had no choice in my mind but to use all tools necessary, and it was about a pound of C4 to end the standoff.
As far as what Florida's politicians had to say, Governor Rick Scott issued a statement only reacting to the deaths of the Dallas police officers by saying the senseless and cowardly act has no place in our country. But Senator Marco Rubio's statement went much deeper.
I think first we witnessed in graphic video the death of Alton Sterling and Philando Castillo. And then last night we witnessed the coordinated and cowardly ambush and the assassination of five brave Dallas police officers. Those of us who are not African American will never fully understand the experience of being black in America. But we should all understand why our fellow Americans in the black community are angry at the images of an African American man with no criminal record, who was pulled over for a busted taillight, slumped in his car seat and dying, while his four-year-old daughter watches from the back seat. All of us should be troubled by these images, and all of us need to acknowledge that this is about more than just one or two recent incidents. Despite decades of progress on many fronts, millions of our fellow Americans feel that they are treated differently because of the color of their skin. And after seeing videos like the one this week, they are scared that the next time they get pulled over, one wrong move could be the last thing they do. We also need to confront it by recognizing that our law enforcement officers are human beings who every day see and interact with the worst of our society. They deal with tragedy and violence and criminality and danger, and they do it so the rest of us don't have to. And while they are brave, they're scared too. They're scared that the next call they respond to may be their last. We have to deal with this as people in our communities. Perhaps the most impactful thing you can do is in your very own community. Look, this community that I live, Miami, lived through a series of riots in the 80s and early 90s that involved police shootings. And it took proactive steps. And things aren't perfect, and there are still issues on both sides of the equation, but they're better than they used to be because there was an honest conversation in this community about the problems, and there were steps taken to address it. So that's an example of action that occurred at the local level that did involve government, but it also involved community leadership, and ultimately it involved communities taking responsibility for themselves and each other.
And to Rubio's call, what can you do? What more can I do? I instinctively use my knowledge of the media, my contacts, perhaps you as a lawmaker, judge, lawyer, lobbyist, accountant, doctor, retiree, entrepreneur, student, police officer. I could keep going. How can you help solve this problem? So now about those stress tips. It is okay to step away from social media. The world will not end if you skip part of that heated debate in all caps. Manage your emotions, take breaks, exercise, find a caring and supportive group, engage in your community, and don't be afraid. to ask for help. This is The Rotunda, a podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics.
Do you think this is politically motivated?
It's no question.
No question?
No question.
It's no question it's politically motivated?
Absolutely.
Who do you think?
Not only just political, racially motivated.
Let's turn to Jacksonville, where Congresswoman Corinne Brown is using everything she can to clear her name again. Though this time, it comes after she was indicted along with her chief of staff, Elias Simmons, in a conspiracy and fraud scheme involving a fraudulent education charity. Check out episode 53 of The Rotunda to hear Brown battle it out with members of the Capitol Press Corps as she tried to dodge answering questions about what we suspected and now know today. But even after being charged with multiple counts of mail and wire fraud and concealing material facts, Brown remains defiant.
My attorneys are here, and we will present the other side. It used to be a program on TV, and here is the rest of the story. We got the rest of the story. So I'm looking forward to presenting the rest of the story.
But the story investigators have been piecing together for months shows Brown using a fake charity organization as a personal slush fund. Jacksonville's First Coast News team has been all over this story.
Court records say the money was used for plane tickets, from airs to personal vehicles, and vacations to the Bahamas, Los Angeles, and Miami. The pair also allegedly used cash for lavish events in D.C., a luxury box at a Beyonce concert, and a luxury box for a game between the Jags and the Redskins. Attorneys today read the indictment that says multiple unnamed donors sent money to Brown. $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 checks sent via mail, records say.
Brown is running for re-election in her newly drawn District 5 seat, but if you listen to episode 57 of The Rotunda, aptly titled Insidious Competition, you'll hear former State Senator Al Lawson planning his challenge against Brown and has been assuring her constituents that he comes baggage-free. Even though Brown has stepped down as a ranking member of the House Committee on Veterans Affairs, she said she will keep on fighting.
I really do believe that the work I've done speak for me. My heart is just really heavy. This has been a very difficult time for me, my family, my constituents, but I'm looking forward to a speedy day in court to vindicate myself.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. This program is about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. If you have yet to do so, remember to visit rotundapodcast.com. You can support this program with a financial contribution by clicking donate at the top right-hand corner of the website. Or join our corporate partners by sponsoring this program. Remember to chime in on social media at rotundapodcast.com, on Twitter, or find us on Facebook. And as always, thanks for your support.
This really is our moment, and this really is an exciting time. It's an exciting time as a Floridian, for all citizens, I believe, but it's an exciting time as a Floridian with a disability.
That's Michael Rausch with the National Disability Institute, bringing excitement to Florida's capital over a new program, Able United, that will give a person with a disability a chance to enroll in tax-free savings and investment accounts without jeopardizing their other benefits.
Do you remember me?
I think I do.
Why?
I spotted a familiar face in the crowd on the fourth floor of the Capitol in front of the Senate chambers.
Advanced Driving Systems.
Oh, yes. Now I remember.
Yeah.
Right.
I was moderating the candidate forum.
That was very nice. And too frequently, candidates ignore the disabled population, mm-hmm. are afraid to get into the conversations about persons with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's the most common minority population in the world. It's the largest and most inclusive, but yet people are afraid to engage us. But it's 57 million of us in America, 1 billion worldwide, and with the aging population, these numbers are going to go through the roof.
Dr. J.R. Harding is a two-time quadriplegic, an international speaker on disability rights, and he works for the state.
All right. So what does this legislation mean to you?
Well, it means that people with disabilities can now go to work and not be penalized for doing what everybody does, which is to contribute, to learn, to spend, to save, and to have choices with your own dollars.
Before the Able United program, Michael Rausch says a person with a disability was capped at living in poverty.
To remain eligible for supplemental security income, it stated that you had to have a disability, but you also had to remain poor. You had to remain poor because you could not save over $2,000. But today is a new day. Today is a new day. Today, because of Able United, an individual can save up to $14,000 a year. That changes the playing field for individuals with disabilities. This opens the door for us to really build that life of work, to build that life of savings, but also to build that life of asset development where I can be economically self-sufficient.
Senate President Andy Gardner, whose son has Down syndrome, has been a vocal advocate for programs for people with disabilities.
The summer before I became Senate President, we were up here all the time talking about what do we want to get done. And what we found was every major issue that we wanted to try to do, there was always that underlying problem of how do you help somebody get a job, knowing that if they get that job and they're successful, they lose their benefits. And to be in the place where Lisa Vickers came in and said they did it, they passed the ABLE Act in Washington, it allowed us to move quickly to get it done. And the first session, obviously we had a tremendous amount of time we spent talking about healthcare, but to get that done, I mean, we passed it and with Representative Rodriguez and Senator Beniquisto. And then what you found, it still took a year to work through all the particulars. I mean, you're dealing with the IRS, you're dealing with the federal government, and thankfully, you know, we're here.
So we are here. Where exactly? I took a walk with the outgoing Senate president to his old stomping ground, his office. Technically, it's still his office until November, but most of it's under construction due to renovations of the House and Senate chambers.
So what does it mean today? Here we go. Talk about construction.
Oh. All right, so scratch that. Suddenly, there's too much noise in this office, which is partly covered with a black tarp. But we make our way to Katie Betta's office. She's in charge of Senate Communications.
This is your office?
Oh, no.
It's so nice and warm. I like it.
She's got the Mike Fazzano mood lighting.
So, yeah, Senator Gardner, what does it mean today, this press conference, the culmination to this point?
I don't know if you heard me. We actually set our account up this morning. So we're up and running.
What will this program do? What does it mean?
Yeah, so we always, when we think about the vision of how you help a family with unique abilities, is whenever that diagnosis happens, your mindset changes. You know, your dreams for your child change. And sadly, most of the information families were getting was not positive. It was not uplifting or options that were good, right? And so what we tried to do is lay out almost like a deck of cards. Whenever that diagnosis happens, here are 30 options for you. You know, whatever your child's unique ability is, it's like creating the program at UCF. And we have 10 kids with unique abilities going to University of Central Florida. And we want to have that all over the state of Florida. And so we just looked at everything. Everything may not be perfect for every child. Every child's going to have a different unique ability. But we wanted all those options, and this is just a key piece of it.
Yeah. So what will happen? What will we see happen next going forward for those who don't know or
will
be hearing this for the first
time?
Well,
I think what you see here is going to be a heavy marketing to all of the advocacy groups. When you look at the personal learning scholarship account that we created 3 years ago, now the Gardner Scholarship, that was word of mouth. and they had 2,500 people sign up in a waiting list, and now it's doubled, you know. And so you have all these different things that, you know, there's no lobbyists necessarily that are out there. There's no huge associations with millions of dollars to push an agenda. These are just families that are trying to find what is best for their child. And I think this will grow rapidly. I think they'll market it well, and it's exciting.
How has your personal experience impacted where we are now?
Well, certainly my personal experience, but also my marriage, you know, because I'm married to a wonderful person in Camille, who's an advocate. I mean, she has started her own foundation, and most of the things that we have been involved in, it was because Camille came home one day and said, you know, you ought to think about X. Or I got an email from this mom who had a problem with the IEP program at her school, which we did reforms to that. Or, oh, you know, the special diploma ought to be changed. We eliminated the special diploma. Now they're on a regular diploma track. It's so much of it is just being in the right place at the right time to be able to take an issue and say, okay, we'll fix that. And it's not always with a press conference. Like I said, it's not always with a group of lobbyists that are helping you. It's a tweak in a bill that one thing we would do in my office is we would track statutes. Mm-hmm. And we didn't always file bills. We would just go in and run an amendment and just quietly do it and fix it. And, you know, it served us well.
What can you tell us about this process now that it's like, you know, for those outside looking in, what has it been like to be Senate president?
I think it's easier to influence a process than people think. I think there's this perception that this is like Washington where nothing gets done. And like, there will always be people who say we don't get enough done or anything done. But to come up here and know that within a 60-day period you can change a law is very impactful. We spent a lot of time watching the news of Washington, which is totally dysfunctional, when the reality is Tallahassee affects people's lives more than Washington does in many ways. And it's been a blessing to be a part of it. I remember when Dick Armey, who was majority leader in the U.S. House of Representatives, was leaving. He'd been there for Reagan. He'd been there for the revolution, everything. And he was asked about it, and he said, you know, I didn't accomplish anything somebody else couldn't have done. Mm-hmm. I just was blessed to be in the seat at the time. And I sort of feel that way. It's been a blessing, and I'll miss it.
Yeah. What will you miss most?
Katie Betta. Well, I'll miss her. Carlicia occasionally. I'll miss certainly the members, mm-hmm. you know, and those are lifelong friendships. I mean, and that's Republicans and Democrats. I mean, that's, you know, Chris Smith, who we've served together for 15 years, give or take. You miss that interaction. You'll still see them. I mean, when I'm in, you know, South Florida, I'll see members. So you'll still have that. Probably one thing I'll miss the most is we've had such a close bond with our staff up here in the President's Suite. I've been blessed beyond belief. I'll miss this sitting around and the banter and just talking about policy and joking around, taking our job very serious, but not ourselves, because it's a fleeting moment, you know. The reality is I go home, nobody knows who I am, and you get caught up, and because everybody in 4-block radius may know who you are, and it's not that big of a deal. But I'll miss that. I'll miss the Tony Cortez, who worked for me. He's already cleaned out his office. That was a little sad walking by to... Mm-hmm. not see him in there. But.
So will you be doing anything else in public life? Will you go back in public office?
I wouldn't be opposed if something came up. But I tend to look at it as something would have to come up where I, as a family, we said, you know what, we could really have a positive impact. Title's not that important to me. You know, being elected's not that important. What's important is being able to look at something and say, you know what, I think I could really be effective in that role. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking at anything. I'm glad I'm not on the ballot in November. Yeah. I'm glad I'm taking a little break, but we'll see. You never know.
Thanks again to Senate President Andy Gardner. There's more to our conversation. He weighs in on some of the issues he thinks Florida's Constitutional Revision Commission should tackle when they meet. Plus, political scientist Susan McManus discusses the politics behind choosing the 37-member commission. There's always so much more to cover. Florida's environment, the algae bloom. We'll talk all about it. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.